a thousand generations ahead of them. Cool as they come. See, all my suits are Calvin Klein. My lucky number 69.
Hey everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR. This is Brian Wimpen, and we are coming to you live every day talking about human resources. I want to say thanks to PeopleClues, my partners over there, peopleclues.com, great assessment play. Check them out. And we want to get to our guest as quickly as possible because I'm sure that he has some life-changing bits of wisdom to impart today on the show. So I'll set that bar fairly high because I know you're the guy that can handle it. I just feel it. So, Eric Meyer, welcome to Drive Through HR. How are you?
Good, Brian. Thanks for having me. I'm prepared to come up way short of your expectations.
Fantastic. It's we'll just call it Way Short of Expectation Tuesday.
Perfect.
Put that on a
motivational
poster right there. That's all money. So
I agree.
Well, hey, if you would introduce yourself, we got lots of new listeners each day and each week, and then we'll roll into kind of what's going on in your world.
All right. Hello, drive-through HR listeners. My name is Eric Meyer. I am an employment attorney in Philadelphia at the law firm of Dilworth Papson. I have a blog, which is where you can find all of my contact information. The blog is called TheEmployerHandbook.com. Where I blog every weekday and have some guest bloggers, too, about HR and employment law topics, anything that may be of interest to HR professionals, the C-suite, in-house counsel. You can find pretty much everything you need to know about what's new in the law at the blog. You can connect with me on Twitter from the blog. You can connect with me on LinkedIn, Facebook, all that stuff. It's TheEmployerHandbook.com. Thanks again for having me, Brian.
Well, good. Well, let's jump right into it. So, let's go into your world and what's currently top of mind and then anecdotally keeping you up at night.
Oh well, I never lose a wink of sleep at night over work.
good
let's
man.
Make that clear. My kids are keeping me up at night. I've got a 2-month-old, a 3-year-old,
yeah,
and a 1.5-year. So that keeps me up, or my wife up at night. I don't want to oversell that, or she would kill me. But what's new and topical in employment law? Well, I guess we've got a couple of things going on right now. Social media is always a big thing, as the National Labor Relations Board is really now starting to sink its teeth in with some actual decisions from the board as to whether the discipline that employers are doling out is permitted under the National Labor Relations Act and whether your social media policies are too broad. Along those lines, the National Labor Relations Board is also has issued some decisions recently about that at-will employment language that you all have in your employee handbooks that say that you know, an employee who works for the company is an at-will employee, can be fired at any time, can leave at any time. The board is taking the position that, hey, not so fast. That kind of language may violate the National Labor Relations Act because it could chill or somehow interfere with the rights of employees to organize and improve the terms and conditions of their employment and unionize. And by saying you're at-will, that may conflict with employment may be like in a unionized workforce. Maybe you wouldn't be at will, you'd be a for-cause type employee. So that's the kind of thing that the board has taken up right now, and that's what I've been looking at. But aside from that, you know, same old, employees are getting sued for discrimination and FMLA and Americans with Disabilities Act, and I follow it, I defend it, I write about it, so, you know. It's never a busy, never a quiet day out here in Philadelphia.
Well, that's you covered a lot of ground in a very short amount of time there.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All of that. Well, folks, it's been a good show. We're going to move on from there. So what are the things, you know, obviously there's always priorities, right? There's HR needs to look at everything. They need to be, you know, all-knowing, omnipresent when it comes to, you know, what's going to, you know, what precedent cases are happening, which we all know that that is impossible to spend the time doing. That's not the specialty of the practice. So what are two or three things, or hell, even one thing, that people should really make sure that they stick into Google Reader or they follow your blog that they're just up to speed on that could really surprise them?
Sure. How could you possibly have time to read all these blogs when we all know that HR professionals are out background checking and Facebooking potential applicants to see who's got the red flags in their background? Of course, they're asking, they're demanding passwords to do that as well. What are a couple of things that you can put in your RSS feeder to try and stay up to date? I'll give some plugs for my fellow bloggers. I know you've had John Hyman on the show before.
Mm-hmm.
Ohio Employers Law blog. You can just Google it and find it. He's great. He blogs every day, every weekday, and it's not just about Ohio cases, but it's about topics that have broader appeal and broader impact. Daniel Schwartz at the Connecticut Labor and Employment Law blog. I apologize if I got that slightly wrong, but it's Connecticut Employment Law blog, basically. He does the same thing. He's an active blogger. Good for HR professionals to follow. Both of these guys write in a way that's very approachable, very easy to follow. Who are some other bloggers that I'm really into? Mark Toth, T-O-T-H, at the Manpower Blogs, B-L-A-U-G, Manpower Blog. Really down to earth, easy, short blog posts, easy to swallow, easy to digest, but great information there. I'll give a shout for TLNT, who picks up, syndicates some of my blog posts and also has several other bloggers. Great for HR information, maybe less emphasis overall on the law, but you get a pretty good mix. Let's go two more blogs. Lawfist Space is a good one. Philip Miles in State College, Pennsylvania, has a great blog called Lawfist Space, obviously, after the movie Office Space. Good, yeah. Lawfist Space, LawfistSpace, good source for employment law. And who gets the good nods every year? Delaware Labor and Employment Law blog, Molly DiBianca, does a great job. And one more, where I could go on all day, we'll say FMLA Insights. Last one, FMLA Insights. Those the folks out at in Illinois do a wonderful job at keeping HR folks and attorneys really in tune with what's going on in the world of FMLA. So Jeff Novak and FMLA Insights, great blog.
So what was Molly's last name again? That's a cool name. I'm going to read it just because of that.
Molly DiBianca. You can follow her. I don't know many Twitter handles anymore, but hers is Molly D-I-B-I. So Molly Dibi, or DB or whatever it is, but MollyDibi. She's a good follow, good blog.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So good resources. So what's, you know, let's get down to some actual content and a few talking points of what do folks really need to be focused on right now? We're at the end of the year. Let me get some context to that. We're at the end of the year sprint here. There's a lot. Everybody is trying to figure out, okay, not only from a budgeting, but from, you know, maybe an enrollment situation. They're maybe doing a conversion at the beginning of the year. What are the things that they shouldn't miss, or the one thing they shouldn't miss on the law side? They just need to be paying attention to.
I would say I'll give you three things. give everyone some homework. First is, HR professionals in the private sector need to be paying attention to what the National Labor Relations Board is doing right now. I talked about it before. They're getting now into not just union organizing and union elections, but also your employee handbook, your social media policy. The National Labor Relations Act covers not only unionized employers, but also non-union employers. And a lot of what we're seeing before the board actually involves complaints or unfair labor practices that are made against non-union employers. So HR professionals need to be mindful of what the board is doing and how it's interpreting your employee handbooks and your social media policies and things like that. That's not to say that anything the board does, for instance, if the board says that at-will employment language should not be in your employee handbook, I'm certainly not suggesting to take that out, but you need to be mindful of what the board is doing. Other areas to be looking at, I think Americans with Disabilities Act is becoming a pretty hot issue in terms of pretty much everyone now is disabled in some way, shape, or form based on how the Act was amended a couple years back, relaxing the definition of what constitutes a disability. Really, the focus now is how can we provide reasonable accommodations for our employees who have disabilities? So keep an eye on what the courts are saying as to what are some reasonable accommodations, what aren't reasonable accommodations. One type of reasonable accommodation that could be reasonable in one case but not reasonable in another is telecommuting. And I know that SHRM is having a big push on I guess it's their Teleflex campaign, flex working. So one accommodation to consider if it's right for your particular employee is telecommuting. And the last area, it's been growing and growing, and I don't see it slowing down anytime soon, is wage and hour. Are you paying overtime correctly? Are you classifying your employees properly? I mean, do you have an employee who you're just calling an independent contractor? And because you're calling them an independent contractor and they're in fact an employee, you're going to have all sorts of wage and hour issues down the line. Also, the issue of have I classified my employees properly in terms of non-exempt, the guys and gals who are entitled to overtime when they work over 40 hours in a work week, or are these people actually exempt and they can work any number of hours and never get overtime because they're exempt? So wage and hour, National Labor Relations Act, and Americans with Disabilities Act, I think, are three big areas that employers and HR professionals need to pay attention to.
Great, great, obvious, top of mind. I mean, those are all not exactly, groundbreaking new subjects, but the priority of where you focus on, obviously based on a decision or a leaning, so to speak, or a brief, obviously gets important. We've got some good, I've got good relationships with folks here with our local chapter and just some of the law folks here that do a fantastic job of putting it in very, just business terms versus out of legal terms of here's what you got, here's the reality of what you're looking at, and here's mm-hmm. where the focus is. And so, I think you do a really good job of kind of articulating it in a way that you can wade through the legalese part of it and get down to the business impact part of it. So
I appreciate that.
Appreciate that. I mean, appreciate you guys doing that, because there's definitely, obviously I haven't read Molly's blog yet or some of the other people you listed, but you guys do a great job, and I think you have the followership because you're able to do that and put it just in, like, from a practitioner standpoint and a business owner standpoint, is like, okay, here's the reality. Is you can sit around all day long and you could literally freak out and focus and take insurance out and spend everything you make on all these things, but at the end of the day, here's the priorities of, the reality of how it could impact your business. Wage and hour, prime example. Contractor, that's been going on forever, right?
Yep.
I mean, some people will come in. I know the state of Illinois, that was probably, it's probably in the last 10 years, waged a campaign or a war against everybody on changing some things up. And it was a big impact on the state as far as the contractor definition. And I know that was something that Oklahoma here, we've had, there's been a lot of very active just activity from the SHRM chapters and from the various business organizations, the state chamber, to make sure that they didn't, somebody didn't maneuver in and rewrite some language that would put everybody at a completely competitive disadvantage. And so it's incredibly important. So do a quick reset. Sorry about that. We're on talking with Eric Meyer, great blogger, employment law attorney, does a good job of keeping things into perspective for us. So what do you think? Where do you think can you give us kind of the two ways that you think based on the upcoming election? Fairly important. Can you give us if it goes Democrat one way, incumbent, or it goes Republican? Just put your futurism hat on for a second, and you know, kind of where short term and long term is that going to affect kind of policy and what the HR practitioner or business owner might end up seeing?
Sure. Well, I think if Obama wins, the complexion of the National Labor Relations Board isn't really going to change. We have everyone, I hope I have this right, everyone at the board right now, or most everyone at the board right now, is a recess appointment, which means that these board members were appointed without the express approval of Congress. They weren't named, they were nominated and then voted upon. These are people who President Obama appointed during recess. And right now the board sits 3-1 in favor of, well, I'll say the employee or the union, as opposed to being, you know, in favor of the employer. And this generally tends to happen when you have a Democrat serve as president. So if that continues, you're going to tend to see more union, you know, more decisions from the board that would favor the union. You may also see some rulemaking at the National Labor Relations Board. By way of example, there was a rule that the board tried to make and impose recently that would have shortened the time from when a union comes in, tries to organize the workplace. Once they present a petition to the National Labor Relations Board to have an election, usually it takes several weeks, maybe 6 or 7 weeks, to have an actual union election. And the board was trying to make changes to the rules so that the time from petition to election would have been shortened. Why is this a big deal? Because many employers, when the union comes in to try and organize, are caught flat-footed. They haven't taken union avoidance steps already. They've almost taken for granted that their workplace would remain union-free. So the employer needs some time to get its feet under it and to mobilize and to put forth a anti-union, pro-employer campaign to keep the union out. By shortening the time frame, it shortens the amount of time that you can do that. So shortening the election time would not be great for employers. If Obama stays in office, he has said that he wants to pass laws or at least focus on gender equality. He's done the Lilly Ledbetter Act, was the first bill that he signed early on in his presidency, and he wants to take further steps to lessen the gap, to the extent there is one, between the sexes in terms of how they are treated in the workplace. So, you know, will he have the support from Congress? Right now, he doesn't. There's a Republican majority in the House. There's a scant Democrat majority in the Senate. So he may have trouble getting some support from Congress, but we'll see. If we see Mitt Romney prevail, I think some of these recess appointments, the National Labor Relations Board, are going to go away, and you'll start to see the board tilt towards the employer. So a rollback then of some of the board rulings that I talked about before, because the board can always reverse itself. Maybe some legislation coming through that would help small businesses, but I don't think you're going to see a lot in the way of new laws passing that would put further restrictions on new discrimination law, new anti-discrimination laws, new things like that. I'll give you an example. There's a law pending in Congress right now our bill pending in Congress right now, the Employee Non-Discrimination Act, which would make unlawful at the federal level discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. Many states have this in effect. Many localities have this in effect, but there is no federal law banning discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. It's something that I don't think any employer should be discriminating against anyone on the basis of sexual orientation, but I think a bill like that would be more likely to pass with Obama in versus having Mitt Romney in office.
That's probably a safe opinion and prediction. I don't think you're going too far out on the ledge on that one.
Right.
So lots swirling around, a lot more of the same, not really anything tremendously groundbreaking. What's up with OFCCP kind of, they were pretty much like top of conversation there for probably 6 months. And because of the kind of the whole Medicare, the $50,000 kind of the federal, if you're basically submitting to Medicare, like all health care, more than 50 grand, then all of a sudden you were drawn in under, all of health care under the OFCCP, from what I understand. And so it just got really, really more confusing, which is amazing that you can say that, but it did. And so what's up with them? What's the latest with because we've got lots of listeners who actually do government contracting or some point down the supply chain, so they fall under that jurisdiction.
In my practice, I'm not seeing a lot right now with OFCCP in terms of it being a hot issue, and I think it probably should be hotter than it really is. I remember maybe about a year or two back, I tried to organize an OFCCP workshop for clients and anyone who may be interested, local businesses, and the response rate was light, so much so that we just decided not to go through with the conference. So I don't think it's really much on anyone's radar right now, as opposed to the other issues that I discussed. I think employers right now maybe have other fish to fry or other fish that they're being told to fry by their lawyers, and OFCCP really isn't one of them right now.
Got it. Well, that's kind of the – I haven't really – they've been – obviously the EEO is kind of consistently pops up, and then just some of the different activities from the Department of Labor, and then more the NLRB. And I mean, that pretty much is like right now much more prevalent as far as media anyway. Is there a time of the year, kind of switch directions, is there a time of the year that the different agencies kind of rise up and all of a sudden they have a full court press for maybe fourth quarter, first quarter? Is it seasonal? What's kind of the makeup of that? Just curious.
Well, I can't speak much to that other than I know that the EEOC, I believe, just closed out its fiscal year. I think I have this right. I want to say at the beginning of October, I believe they started fresh. Maybe if Chai Feldblum is listening to this, she is on Twitter at Chai Feldblum, ChaiFeldblum. She can comment on that. She is an EEOC commissioner. But I know they just filed many, many, many lawsuits right before the end of what I thought was the close of their fiscal quarter or fiscal year. So, if you get an agency like the EEOC that needs to close out before the fiscal year changes, you'll see a rash of lawsuits filed. But that doesn't generally affect you and I. It only really affects those who are being sued. In terms of rulemaking, anything that could have a broader footprint, let's see, the National Labor Relations Board, it seemed like it was kind of near the summer or fall of last year, if I have my timing right, that they started announcing and wanting to implement certain rule changes that would affect employers covered employers across the country. I'm trying to recall when the EEOC announced some of its rulemaking changes, but it escapes me. In my practice, usually summer gets quiet because people go away, once employers get more flush with money, they want us to update handbooks and things like that, or maybe after they get sued, they want us to update handbooks. I think that's really more the trigger for when I get busy. It's whenever someone gets sued. So it's not just the litigation itself, but what follows after it, the reactive preventative measures that are taken.
Well, that's how human nature-ish that would be. And do I typically slow down as soon as I see potentially a car that looks like a police officer? And I'm not like a huge blazing speeder, but if I think that is potentially somebody that's going to have an impact on me, I slow down. And if I get a ticket, then I really slow down for a long time because I don't want another one in the time frame that the insurance company will, raise holy hell with me, right? So on the bigger picture, what would be the one thing, and this is good takeaway kind of nuggets for the practitioner side of the business, what would be the one thing that they absolutely need to review in the handbook that gets looked over, that you're like, wow, that just – look at that, make sure it's right, spend the money, get it revised. What's the one thing you could pull out of there?
If I were to do one thing, I'd look at your at-will employment language. Make sure if you're in an at-will state, which is pretty much every state, I think, except for Montana, make sure that you have strong at-will employment language in your employee handbook that confirms for employees that they can be fired at any time for any reason or no reason at all. They can quit at any time for any reason or no reason at all, and have your employee sign an acknowledgement that he or she has reviewed the handbook, understands the handbook, and then keep that acknowledgement in the personnel file. If you're going to pick one item, that's the one. If you want to slip down just maybe to two A and 2B, make sure that your Americans with Disabilities Act language is good, you put in there that you will try to accommodate employees who come to you if they need an accommodation. So, give employees, plant that seed that if they are disabled, they should be coming to you and they need an accommodation, they should be coming to you asking for it. That can stop problems that could develop down the line because the employer has to do some guesswork. And the other one would be FMLA. FMLA, make sure that your language is tight and compliant, that you have all the eligibility requirements right, that you have in your policy a method for calculating FMLA eligibility. Is it the rolling method? Is it the calendar method? Is it the however you're going to determine whether someone has time left to take for FMLA? So those are 2A and 2B.
Got it. Fantastic. So don't have the oh my God method. We should have did that.
If you're listeners, if you have the oh my God method, after it strikes, give me a call.
There we go. Love it. Now, one side or the other. There's always a silver lining somewhere, someplace.
Right.
So, well, Eric, thank you so much for coming on, folks. You can find this guy everywhere. Follow the blogs, great resources. Love to have you back on, obviously, in early Q1 2013. You do a great update. Keep doing what you're doing. We definitely appreciate it. So,
yeah, Brian, I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me. And again, anyone who wants to find me, best way to get all my contact information is theemployerhandbook.com.
Perfect, and good luck and enjoy that 2-month-old, because we know your wife's doing the work, so you need to take her some flowers, okay?
That's right.
Okay. Thanks, Eric,
Brian.
Folks. We are out of here.